Today, as probably alluded a little bit by my introduction, I want to get into the skinny on weight management. Sort of the reason my practice started was seeing a lot of patients in general GI practice that really had a lot of the same complaints, really over and over again. And seeing a lot of this information on the internet, on journal articles, newspapers, magazines, and knowing that patients were utterly confused. And sort of being able to bundle that information down to be able to help patients in a sustainable way. So let's jump right in. So today we're going to talk about sort of what is obesity, the definition and prevalence, sort of the old ways of thinking about obesity, what those contributing factors are, how do we assess, and what is that algorithm we try to go through to systematically be able to help and approach patients, anti-obesity pharmacology, which a lot of patients aren't familiar with. Bariatric endoscopy, which even a lot of physicians aren't familiar with. And then the things we know about bariatric surgery and that multidisciplinary approach we employ as well. So, obesity has finally been declared a disease state, right? We finally got a definition that's been approved as an actual disease. And sort of what that definition that's been put together by the Obesity Medical Association is a chronic, relapsing, multifactorial neurobehavioral disease that promotes adipose tissue dysfunction and abnormal fat mass physical force that results in adverse metabolic, biochemical, and psychosocial health consequences. A very long and complicated definition, but exactly gives us an idea of just how difficult excess weight is. It is something that is chronic, why most patients will tell you they've struggled with this their entire life or for a long period of time. Some patients, we also call it relapsing, which that means somebody will do well for many, many years, and then they have a weight regain episode, and then they have to go back and work at it again. Multifactorial, meaning it can be caused by so many different things, many of which we'll get into today. Neurobehavioral, it affects your psyche, right? If patients feel shame, guilt, depression, anxiety, all of these things are associated with diet and food intake. We also have some an adipose tissue is a fat tissue dysfunction. We'll see sort of hormonal changes and sort of hormonal program resistances that we can notice as well with abnormal adipose tissue, abnormal forces, adverse metabolic and biochemical, and of course the psychosocial health consequences. So just to give you an idea, a complicated definition for a complicated disease process. And when we talk about prevalence, I like to start with talking to patients about sort of how we got here, what has been happening sort of just in the US first. We'll talk about it, then we'll talk about worldwide. And so from this data here, you can see from 2000 to 2018, we've seen an increase in the prevalence of patients being diagnosed with obesity and severe obesity. And this has gone up pretty steadily over the last couple of years. And this is what we've noticed sort of as being sort of one of our epidemics in this country and around the world actually at this point. So we know this is something that is happening. And the question is sort of how are we going to help patients with that? And what are we going to do about it? And then we look at the share of adults when we start to think about what is happening globally around the world. And this is sort of taking a look at patients that are diagnosed with overweight or obesity. And from 1975 to 2016, in every single, most of all of these countries, you see there are inclines over every single year in the proportion of patients that are diagnosed with these diseases. And when we look at things sort of globally from the changes from 2000 to 2016, it's pretty stark when you're able to look at it with colors. And so as you can see, sort of in the US, it was like 40-50% back in 2000. And now you see 70% of that population. You see changes in South America, changes in Africa, changes throughout Europe. You see all of these changes that have differed and sort of those colors darkening on the right side of that screen. So that's correlating to an increased proportion of patients diagnosed with overweight and obesity. So not only is it something that we're seeing in the United States, we're seeing this worldwide. And then we'll see sort of the definition, the patients with diagnosed with obesity. And so these are people with a BMI greater than 30, and we see the same thing. So the trend is still remains the same from 1975 to 2016, there being an increase in proportion and prevalence of patients diagnosed with obesity. And then when we look at obesity from 2000 to 2016, again, the same exact trend worldwide when those colors are darkening in color, which are sort of correlating to an increased percentage of the population being affected with these disease processes. And so, what are these contributing factors is what we'll sort of jump into now. Why are we seeing this worldwide? Why are we seeing this in the United States and throughout sort of the world? And it's sort of several different ideas of sort of why this has come about. We have gone from sort of hunter-gatherer mode to, back when patients were mostly sat around the table, but there were so far less processed food, to now things being very much convenience foods, junk foods, processed foods, a lot of fast food options that we have that are sort of to correlate with our lives that are sort of super busy. And then we have sort of sitting in very sedentary sort of jobs. And this happened for a lot of my patients over the last 2 years with sort of going from commuting to work, being up and about, to sort of sitting at home with COVID. And also, we've seen a lot of conveniences too, right? So instead of walking in airports and some of these theme parks, you see walking, walkways here, right? That are helping you move along. You don't even have to walk, you can just stand there. And also, this is one of the hilarious images is that I saw is people even going to the gym will take the escalator rather than the stairs to go work out. So these are conveniences that we have seen around sort of happening in our country that sort of are maybe contributing factors. Other things we think about are sort of a multiple hit hypothesis. And so some of the things we talked about recently, you'll see on the left side of the screen here with the hunter-gatherer. And then we sort of changed to more agriculture, and then more industrial food, and then more processed foods as well. And these sort of, we saw these are sort of all insults that are happening to our microbiome, to the way we live our lives, to how much movement we have, how much access to food that we have, and sort of the way sort of daily life and food intake happens. So you see sort of all of these sort of changes here, sort of in change, quality sort of changes in your microbiome and what's happening in your gut. So when your diet changes, you see a little bit of a decrease in your microbiome here. The more sanitation we have, we see a little bit more changes in your microbiome. The more we're washing our hands, the less we're outside in dirt and sort of farming and those sort of things. And then we have things that we needed that were great for sort of civilization, like antibiotics, but these also changed your gut microbiome and how your body reacts to particular foods. And then we have sort of processed foods, C-sections, formulas, all of these things that sort of also additionally change your microbiome and reduce that sort of the species and that diversity that you see in your microbiome. We've known through, there's a lot we don't know about the microbiome, but we know that sort of having an increased diversity helps patients to be able to utilize energy better and to be able to utilize those calories that we're intaking to be able to use them more effectively. And so there's many, many different hits that we'll talk about today that sort of got us to this point. And my goal during this talk is to get patients to sort of try to remove that stigma that we have around excess weight and sort of that blame game of, oh, it's your fault. You're eating too much and moving too little. But taking sort of a global take a perspective to look at sort of all of these other insults that have happened sort of globally around the world that can help and contribute to get us to this point. And so when I think about sort of the processed food, sort of in GI practice, I see a lot of patients with a lot of the similar symptoms with abdominal discomfort, bloating, all types of symptoms. And so my question was, after the upper endoscopy is normal, the colonoscopy is normal, the stool studies are normal, the biopsies, all of the labs, all of the MRI, the ultrasound, the HydraScan, all of these things are negative. My question of what prompted me to do a nutrition fellowship was to understand what is happening then. Why are 80% of my patients having all of these symptoms and why all of them have such problem difficulty with weight loss? What is that common thread? And the more I boiled down to it, that common thread seemed to be all of the convenience foods, all of the processed foods. And then I thought, well, what in the world are in those foods, right? What is causing these issues? And what makes food sort of processed? And so that sort of is a term that sort of gets fleshed out in data a little bit, but there's a difference between minimally processed and ultra processed. But those things that are ultra processed foods, they have additives, which are another name for them are emulsifiers. And so the question for me was, so when did this all happen? And so there was an explosion of sort of emulsifiers over the years. And initially they would have to go through a lot of testing with the FDA before they were approved to be able to be regarded as safe. But then there was sort of this period of time that sort of lobbyists and companies recognized we really need these things. They are they're helpful in helping us to make cheap food, to make the shelf stable, to make foods more palatable, to make things prettier. So you'll notice in salad dressings or mayo, these things, they don't separate. They look prettier. These are emulsifiers and additives. That's why the things are able to sit on the shelf for a long period of time. It's why they're able to taste the same. You know, if you have something now and 6 months from now, it can taste the same as some of these foods. But what was this doing to our actual gut? And so this picture on the right here is showing sort of what I see when I do a colonoscopy, for example, with somebody with inflammatory bowel disease. You can see sort of ulcerations or breaks in the colon. And these are sort of seen as sort of ulcers sometimes, right? But what is happening, and a lot of data has shown us with emulsifiers themselves, is they cause little tears in the small bowel, little bit of inflammation over time. And so what we've been seeing is that what can happen is you puts you at higher risk for metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome are things like high blood pressure, insulin resistance or diabetes, fatty liver disease. Another name for that is hepatic steatosis. And that sort of that general overall feeling of being unwell and sort of having excess weight as well. And so these are things that we see on a much smaller level than we see in a patient, for example, with Crohn's or ulcerative colitis. But this made sense to sort of why we were seeing these patients with sort of these symptoms that we couldn't really put really in a box to know why they were having these symptoms. But clearly they were, because we see droves of patients that come in that are all feeling pretty poorly and spending a lot of time in doctor's visits and doctor's appointments. And so we want to make sure that we're preserving that gut lumen. That gut lumen is only one cell thick to keep the environment from entering into sort of your bloodstream. And the goal there is to make sure we have a good microbiome that is being sort of fostered by fiber-rich foods and whole foods to sort of keep that layer rather than sort of breaking that layer down and sort of causing those breaks in the mucosa.